Happy Sabbath to you all. And thanks for that special music, guys. That was a beautiful piece, and I know everybody appreciates your service. I don't know about you, but I'd like to go to camp as a camper. Although, to echo what Ed said, I'm not sure my body and my desire are lined up there. The attitude we carry. That's the title of my message today, The Attitude We Carry. Whenever I prepare a message, I always try to consider the importance of what I'm saying for the audience, which I think everyone probably does. And sometimes I feel like it's really more about, you know, more applicable to a certain group or another. But the topic of attitude is something that I feel like from my two-year-olds to the eldest among us, we have something to consider. Because our attitude dictates so much of what we do and say, essentially how we live our lives. So it is an important topic, and I hope you'll take it to heart. We have a calling, we have an invitation, something far more special and awesome than I think we consider perhaps on a regular basis. How we answer that invitation has a lot to do with the attitude we carry. In 1996, I moved to Oregon with my brother and a friend just for the summer at that point, and returning to Chicago after that, and finally moving back to Salem permanently in 1998. But that summer in 1996, I got a job as a server at Pizza Hut, the Pizza Hut that was here in Salem, just right there at Silverton and Lancaster. Well, 22 years ago, during that summer, there were a lot of memories made, and it was really the first time out on my own and for an extended period, kind of my first taste of doing a lot of what I wanted to do without the pressure or expectation from anyone else. And so I had this job that I really enjoyed doing, and I think there was some adventurous part about working there as a younger person and sort of open to new experiences and ideas and everything sort of brand new and interesting and kind of forming your path. Your ideals, learning what you like, don't like. I had a manager there, and Chris was his name. I don't remember his last name anymore, but he was a tall guy. He's pretty fit, pretty strong. He made an impression on me that summer. He made us young men go to the restroom and shave our face with a cheap razor if you had any stubble at all. No shaving cream and just a cheap plastic razor. If you weren't clean shaven before you showed up for work at Pizza Hut. And we ended up being friends. I appreciated something about him. So when we came to work unshaven, he would send us to the bathroom with a stern look, and you kind of already knew. If we refused, we couldn't work. I'm not even sure if that's allowed today. I feel like people would sue or something. But I remember this well because I shaved in the Pizza Hut bathroom only once. And it burned my skin. But I admired him for being that kind of a manager. Perhaps not so much that day, but for a place like Pizza Hut, I feel like he had some pretty high standards. We also had some various plaques and, I don't know, quotes, sayings on the wall, and kind of in this hallway or area between the kitchen and the dining room, and I think only the staff really could see them. And I think it was this manager, Chris, who was responsible for putting him up there. And I'm not actually sure, but our manager above him was nothing like that. So I don't think it was him. Anyway, so we had a short story on gossip and some other things about doing your job well, hanging there in that breezeway or whatever. And anyway, one that we had hanging there that I kind of read and I read again, and it just kind of stuck with me. And I'm going to read it to you now. These words are from Charles Swindoll. The title is Attitude on Life. It says, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. It is more important than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than successes, than what anyone might say or do. It is more important than appearances, giftedness, or skill. The remarkable thing is that we have the choice to create the attitude we have for that day." We cannot change our past. We cannot change the way people act. We cannot change the inevitable. The one thing we can change is the only thing we have control over, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what actually happens to us and 90% how we react to it. I can't tell you why exactly, but these words have stuck with me. The memory of my friend Chris also have stuck with me, and perhaps they both display the same thing in a way. I've said it before, and I feel like I say it a lot, but the world we live in as a whole, and they mentioned this in the camp video, it's slipping further and further away from the nation, a nation of godly values. Now, in 1996, when I read this for the first time, things were different than they were today. People didn't seem to embrace wrong values and right values quite like they do now. I know the world wasn't a utopia. I remember my parents telling me we were going to have a Cold War with Russia, or an actual war with Russia, and perhaps that was going to be the end. But it seems like people called wrong what it is wrong more often. Now I see a society that just can't tell wrong from wrong, or right from wrong, or right from right, or anything. Big and small things. Small amounts of truth and goodness mixed up with the wrong are convincing people to change the way they think about what's actually right. Maybe I'm getting a little philosophical here. So let's define the word attitude. And I think most of us would say something like this, but it's good to have a clear definition. Attitude in the New American Oxford Dictionary is defined as a settled way of thinking or feeling about someone or something, typically one that is reflected in a person's behavior. A settled way of feeling. So this isn't the exception to what's regular. It's not a one-off comment. That's more of an emotion or a mood. A feeling which can be fleeting and is often based on very recent history. Attitude trumps that. I hope that doesn't make you think of Donald Trump. I used that word before he was president. Anyway, attitude is the way of directing our life through a set of guidelines and principles that is displayed in probably most of what we do. An attitude is what we develop and build our life on. And it comes out in our actions, words, and feelings. For a fuller picture here, some synonyms for attitude. Disposition, orientation, aspect, manner, point of view, outlook, approach, perspective, way of thinking, mindset, worldview. So the question I have for you, and the one I ask myself often, what is the attitude we carry? So I have four main points. First one is going to be where attitude starts. And the second, manifestations of attitude. And the third, our need to change. And four, how we change. Where attitude starts. We all carry an attitude. You're putting off something in your silence, in your words, in your presence, or by your absence. People all have a way of feeling and approaching the world and those around us. When we're young, I think it's still forming. We're still connecting all the dots of society and family and love and hate and all the things in between. Little kids, when disciplined, will turn to the person who disciplined them. And they will seek their approval. They will seek their forgiveness. Not always in words, but they have humility. They have forgiveness. They have a clean slate that is being drawn by mom and dad. It's very critical we get these days right. Because once that slate is drawn, attitude is formed. And changing that, while possible, is really hard. Then the teen years. Well, I'm not going to speak from experience here, as I'm just entering these days with my own kids, but talking to a lot of people and reading some on this topic, I get a pretty unanimous response. These years are exceptional. There's often an attitude exhibited that is not the slate we drew at all. And I think it can be downright mean and ugly at times. And there's something so nostalgic about watching your kids act the way you did. if you're willing to come to terms with just how fantastic you were, perhaps in your teenage years. You ever hear someone say, "Oh, that's your kid," when they do something less than great? And when the proud moments come, you're like, "Yeah, I'm taking ownership of that kid, and he's mine. Yeah, that's my kid, you know?" It happens. But when it's something you did well, it's a good feeling that they exhibit that thing. And then there's times I start to retroactively feel bad for my mother having to contend with me when I was young. Sometimes I think it must be DNA I forgot about or wasn't aware of. I mean, I don't feel like we've cultured some of the behavior I see in my own kids at times. But what about after those years where our bodies change and all the stuff in the world is coming at us and all these decisions and new friends come and fall away and things become a bit more solid, and a little more predictable, and you're a little older? Where is our attitude then? Where is our attitude now? Do we have the attitude of love? A mature love? One that is not swayed by little things, easily offended. We carry attitude in everything that we do. We carry it to church. We carry it to work. We carry it to our prayers. We carry it in interactions with our friends and to the people that challenge us. This attitude we carry is a fundamental part of who you are. It is a fundamental part of what you will accomplish today, tomorrow, and in your entire life's work. It's a fundamental part of the value you bring to the family of God. Romans 8. A lot of attitude we display is probably set early in life. I mean, Satan is on it. And kids are pretty easy targets. Romans 8, verse 7. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. In verse 8, so then those who are in the flesh cannot please God. In verse 7 there, where does the enmity against God come from? That hostility towards the most loving being there is, the Creator. It comes from the prince and the power of the air. And it's amazing how cunning he is. All the way back to the beginning of the book. Genesis 4. We have Adam and Eve and the choices they made, but then a more stark example to me is Cain. And in contrast is Brother Abel. The attitude Cain had and the persistence of that attitude. He didn't let go of the attitude. Let's look at that account. Genesis 4 says, now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. And she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Cain did not humble himself, and he did not change. He had the wrong attitude, and it brought death to his own family, his own brother. That's a dark, dark story. Cain let his attitude guide his actions and committed what I would call one of the most egregious acts a person can. Point number two, manifestations of attitude. I want to talk about a few human conditions that manifest because of the attitudes we carry. Now, some common things that people that we don't perhaps attribute to attitude. But remember, attitude is a settled way of thinking or feeling carried out in your behavior. And I don't mean to pick on anybody here. It's not the point. Mostly these things are things I've experienced personally or have done myself. But one that comes to mind throughout my life, are we late? Are we always late? I don't know if you have people in your life like this, but there is something very trying about someone who is consistently late. You can't depend on them when they're needed. They may end up changing a certain experience or event for you. I'm not sure it's always thought of this way, but consistent tardiness is not putting others before ourselves. If you're sharing a ride with this person, the reflection is on you, even if you were going to be 30 minutes early. Not too long ago, I was at a job site, and I was waiting for this company to show up and do this job they had already started, and I had nothing meaningful to do there except meet them. So I just sat in my truck, and I waited. I called. They didn't call me back. And the office finally answered, and they said they would figure out what's going on and get back to me. Well, I couldn't have cared less what they said, really. I was certain that they didn't regard my time as valuable, and I sat there for almost 2 hours. And in ordinary circumstances, I would have just left and rescheduled, but I was in great need for these guys to finish the work this day. And it wasn't a feeling of understanding. Things can happen. I understand that. We all understand that. But this wasn't the first time I had waited on them. And when you have a reputation for it, excuses start not to matter. In construction, it is imperative that people show up on time. And yet, 40-year-old men will tell you their alarm clock didn't go off. I'm not saying that can't happen. But if it happens twice in a week, maybe get another alarm clock or set to, or tell your mom to call you earlier in the morning. I want to read from Colossians. It's an attitude concerning work that isn't easy to find in our modern day. In Colossians 3:23. I'll start in verse 22 here. Servants, in everything, obey those who are your masters on earth, not only with external service as those who merely please people, but with a sincerity of heart because of the fear of your fear of the Lord. Verse 23, whatever you do, whatever your task may be, work from the soul, that is, put in your very best effort as something done for the Lord and not for men, knowing with all certainty that it is from the Lord, not from men, that you will receive the inheritance, which is your greatest reward. It is the Lord Christ whom you actually serve. Now, we're not doing slave driving here. We're just talking about doing your best, giving your all in all you do. But here's what I'm saying. If you can't be on time, it affects others and it doesn't display the attitude of consideration to others. Philippians 2:4 says, let each one of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. People just want to know you respect them, and you show up when you say you will. If your concerns are focused on yourself, you have no need to show up on time. But when you're considering the person who is waiting, and that matters to you, you'd be compelled to be on time. Are we negative? I'm not here to pin this title on anyone. But in the simplest of problems, I go back to what I'm doing on this earth in the first place. We are here to ultimately serve God and His purpose so that we might be a part of His family. How is a negative attitude born out of that? And yes, we have down days. We have struggles. We have struggles in everything. That's life. That is the human condition. But our fallback, our safety net, our final thought, our great hope is such a positive light in our life. We've got to let it shine in our words, on our faces, in our actions. And when you're facing something tough, maybe it's then someone else can remind you of that bigger picture. I know Mr. Armstrong's a little out of fashion, but I remember he used to say, he read the book and we win. Health. What about your health? You know, the chemicals in your body affect your health. Many, many studies have been done. This is well known. When you release the dose chemicals, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins, your body can do amazing things. It feels amazing. You have strength, energy, and you can give encouragement to others. I won't get into what each one does, but these are the ones that we all want and the ones that others want to see in us. And when you release the negative chemicals, negative things go on in your mind. So much so that after a time, you can cause physical health issues, serious health conditions. I'm not talking about small headaches. Negative attitudes have been linked to high blood pressure, diabetes, and other things. And these words probably don't do much when we're down in the trenches. But if we train our minds for good, when we're in a good place, emotionally, mentally, we can avoid some of these pitfalls. It's not my intent here to focus on this one aspect more than others, but I came across this article from Harvard Medical School, and I wanted to share it for its practical value. The first one is something I'm personally really taking to heart. Don't dwell on your age. A growing body of research indicates that people who say they feel younger than their calendar years tend to live longer. A British study of 6,500 people with an average age of 65 found that those who said they felt older than their age had a 41% greater risk of dying in the next 8 years compared to people who felt younger than their actual age. And when you do think about aging, valuing the positive aspects like wisdom, experience, and emotional maturity may add years to your life. In 2000, a team of researchers analyzed data from the Ohio Longitudinal Study of Aging and Retirement. And they found that men and women who have expressed positive views of aging 23 years earlier had lived an average of 7.5 years longer than those with negative attitudes. And we all want to live, so that's good. Focus on what is most important. Quite a bit of research has determined that this focus improves with age, says Dr. Kubzanski. With experience, we become much better able to winnow out the issues that demand our attention from those that may just be minor annoyances. The next time you fret over a perceived slight or a delayed flight, it may help to view the situation through the perspective of your entire life's experience. Practice mindfulness. Increasing evidence indicates that regularly practicing mindfulness, focusing on the moment and accepting your thoughts and feelings non-judgmentally, has a host of psychological benefits, from quelling anxiety to aiding weight loss. In the short term, it can keep you from returning to negative thoughts. And keep a sense of purpose. You may feel that you're at the top of your game just as you are forced to retire. That doesn't mean that you have to accept the notion that you aren't as capable as you once were. Instead, you can view this important life change as an opportunity to start a new business, take up a sport, language, or musical instrument, or plunge into volunteer activities. Doing so can open up new horizons. The attitude of self. Perhaps one of the biggest and most common traps we fall into as humans is the attitude of selfishness. You know, who has a great example of bad attitude? Well, besides him, the Israelites. Everyone, all the Israelites except Caleb, if they could have been thought of as one thing, I guess there's a few that come to mind, but bad attitudes has got to be one of them. They complained and complained. They got upset with Moses. They wanted to be slaves again. They had no faith, even after all the evidence of God. Everyone except Caleb, that is. He was different. He had a different attitude, one of trusting God. Caleb had a different mindset. As a matter of fact, there are more modern translations that actually put the word in there. Caleb, my servant, had a different attitude. He was not rebellious. He did not have the slave mentality. He wasn't pessimistic. He wasn't focused on himself. We have to consider the story of the Israelites. It takes up a lot of the Bible. And they served as a poor example in many ways. So much so that they didn't even get to see the land that was promised to them. And they were selfish, among other things. And sometimes a selfish attitude is just a child who wants to turn on a video game or have a chance to ride the motorbike. These I've witnessed. And while kids are selfish by nature, it is learning time for them. And the hope is that they get over it. Teenagers have sort of a reputation for attitude, as I mentioned. Things are changing, sort of figuring out who you are and what you're good at, determining your self-worth. There's a lot going on. So I take that with a grain of salt. I don't overlook it, but it's really a period of life where there's a lot of guidance and direction needed and a lot of good examples needed. The real concern is adults who find it impossible to get over themselves. Some people never really get to the realization. It's not all about them. They gossip, shun other people, display attitudes of arrogance, playing guilt games, or manipulating other people. Those aren't the attitudes we're modeling. This isn't the attitude that was modeled for us by Jesus Christ. Were we headed in here today to be amongst friends, fellow inheritors of eternity, or some facade? Maybe it's always about us. We can't get over our own stuff. The insecurities, the feelings of not being good enough. I'm not diminishing the reality of those things. They're real. They're issues. But if we let these things last and last for years, we're wasting our time. It's kind of selfish. If our effort is spent doing for others, we won't have time to develop that attitude. Again, there are times where we all need an open ear or a hand to help. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about consistent, settled way of approaching life. Our attitudes are paramount in the success of our life, however you measure that. Money, friends, relationship to God, all are guided by the attitude we carry. The world really doesn't spin because any one of us. God loves us. He wants us. But he can get along without any of us. So when we see our attitude focused on what we need, what we want, what we like, how we feel, we need to check our attitude. We need to check our motive. Luke 10. Luke 10. All four Gospels record this. Perhaps the Scriptures carry a heavy weight of importance when they all carry it. We read here in Luke 10, verse 25. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, Jesus, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, What is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he answered and said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered rightly, do this and you will live. Point number three. Our need to change. So we are born into a world powerfully ruled by the wrong spirit. But parents, siblings, experiences, these things all continue to form our attitudes at young ages. Some is probably genetic, but often at a young age, you could see some direction in a child. You could see personality traits, motivations, attitudes, talents. Maybe like to organize things or work on small details. Maybe they never stop singing. Maybe they have anger. And we can help affect that change for a while, help develop them. Maybe you throw your hands up because they're always fighting. So maybe they'll be professional wrestlers or something. My point is our attitude is largely determined by the time we have the ability to understand what the word means and that we have the ability to actually change it. Maybe I lose you there. Change. The word is synonymous with impossible for many. Your mind turns off at the word. Your defenses go up. Recognition of human carnality becomes your comfort. After all, what could we be expected to do? Life is hard enough with the stresses of work, relationships, the busyness of all the small things and large, and no one is perfect, right? Can we hide there? I'm urging you to think differently. We don't get instant satisfaction from right attitude, and we don't get a lightning bolt in the head when we fail. So the human condition is just to carry on with the path of least resistance and do nothing. Do the same thing. This is our failure. We don't see how we can glorify our God, serve His purposes, please Him, and inspire others with the small steps of change. Perhaps we don't recognize the impact of the attitude we carry. We just watched the camp video here. Every year, church puts on these camps. Great memory with all the kids and the experiences. And frankly, for the adults too. I see kids now and again who I've met at camp who otherwise I would have never known. But what makes camp great? The activities, sure. Friends made. The new experiences, yes, all those things. But the attitude of those serving at camp and the attitude expected of the kids there. Imagine if the counselors and staff were just present. Imagine if they didn't provide a positive atmosphere. They just did the bare minimum to put those camps on. That's not camp. People lift each other up. People help each other out. It's a place where everyone strives to have a positive, godly attitude. And it's a great success. As an adult, I can feel this at camp. It's probably good that the cell reception is really poor, too, because it kind of helps you stay away from the regular life stresses. I'll tell you a story about, I remember of my lackluster attitude as a teenager. When I think back on those days, I think I had some real issues, generally speaking, because my mother wasn't much of a disciplinarian. As far as I know, she was never spanked in her life as a child, so she wasn't big on doing things. But she did this one thing I remember just so well. By this time, I was probably more than she was going to take on physically for a swat or something, because she did give me those when I was little. But she'd be sitting in this chair in the living room, and I remember this really well, and I would say something disrespectful, and she would motion her finger like this, and that meant come over there. And I never challenged that I was going to listen to the finger, so I walked over there, and she's still sitting in the chair, and she would just slap my face. And, oh, man, that did not heal me, right? I was more upset than I was before. And I would walk away and, you know, say something, growl, whatever. I was still mad. And she would motion. She'd, Roger. Oh, okay. So I walked back there. Same cheek, same slap. And sometimes it was quite a few slaps. And I wouldn't successfully walk away without being upset. And it was infuriating at the time. But looking back, it was a controlled measure from my mom to show me something about myself. And one of the most notable times this happened, I had this back and forth. I don't know, 5-6 times I did this. Cheeks hurting, it's real red, and we had a long house, so I was walking back, and you know, she told me, no noise, no anger, let it go. Okay. So I walk all the way back, and I get really far to the back of the house, and I still let out a something, and she never calls my name. So later she told me, she said, I heard you, so I just let it go. I thought, well, that's, you know, so my mom had some wisdom, because I think she was trying to get over the whole thing too, you know, but not lose. Dad, on the other hand, was a little more dramatic. So he was raised in a pretty disciplined house. That was not, it was kind of, you know, a little abusive actually. So anyway, he had to really tone it down to be a balanced kind of dad to us. And he managed to do so. But at times it was a little rough. And I was the youngest. So naturally I got less of the fury. But my oldest sisters say he was a little bit something else with them. And so anyway, Dad really took a stand to disrespect. And so many times, I rolled my eyes. When he said something I didn't like, I rolled my eyes. So that's pretty disrespectful. Now I see that. But one time, I think he had enough. And so I rolled my eyes, and I'm standing there between my bed and the wall, and he's standing at the door, kind of ready to leave. I roll my eyes at something he says, and he jumps across the bed. He's like laying on the bed on his stomach, and he holds me up against the wall by my collar. And he gives me this, like, talk with one finger into my face and, you know, like, spitting on me and everything. And just, you know, like, as he's talking and yelling at me. Anyway, I never rolled my eyes again or I at least learned to turn my head. But I remember this event. And I look back and I realize, like, yeah, I get it. This is happening to me now. I'm seeing what my parents went through. So there's nothing new under the sun, really. Just have a good attitude. The positive energy movement out there, or whatever you call it, it's pretty widespread. People trying to essentially make money from people feeling good. Not always. I mean, there are some inspiring, there are some sincere people, but there's a lot of people making money on it, too. I don't want to take away from anything from the good thoughts. And God says in Philippians 4:8, I'll just read it. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. So good words and thoughts are good. And often it seems money is involved, so that makes it not sure if it's sincere, but we like hearing it. Everybody likes hearing it. They say good things about you. They say good things about your future. They say good things about your relationship with God. They say you deserve just about everything you can imagine. But I draw back to these quotes of yesteryear, you know, the Thoreau, Swindle, C.S. Lewis, and others, because they have a more complete meaning. They seem to carry the weight of choice, responsibility, reward, and contentment, which is more in line with what the Bible actually teaches. The Bible doesn't say just to think good things. It says to do them. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some great things to listen to in modern times. Sometimes we need a little inspiration. I'm all for that. I've listened to a lot of it myself. And if it builds you up and set out to do a better job in your everyday life, great. And it's good for you. But I see a society, I see a culture where we consume just turning towards feeling good and saying good. And like they mentioned in the camp video, everyone's behavior and choices are acceptable. But it's not true. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Jeremiah 17, starting verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. Bad is good. Good is bad. And we don't even understand it. It's creeping into everyone's life. This isn't just that wicked society. It's you and me. It's the church. It's been happening for a while now. The world is changing, and I don't always hear a lot about people doing good for their recognition. There are some, I'm not taking that away. But these people want to be equal and accepted for their immorality, as though it was right. And it's pulling on everybody. People's kindness and generosity isn't news, and if we do hear about it, it's a blip. Maybe you don't catch it. It's not always interesting, frankly. And we live our lives among this culture that's harder and harder to find, harder and harder to stand strong, confident, and sure in what we do. Standing for right is more and more awkward. We can't just talk about good attitudes like everybody's on the same page. We can't just assume that everybody understands what's right or what's good. We can't have good attitudes without moving ourselves, more aligning ourselves with right. Right attitude causes a doing. Point four, how we change. People can get down. That's normal. That's life. It's not all great. It's not all happy. But you know, a great way to get over your struggle, like I've said, stop focusing on yourself. Sure, focus on being better, changing yourself at the level only perhaps you know about. But don't spend so much time worrying and wondering and wanting for yourself and about yourself. I'm not suggesting social martyrdom, but it doesn't seem like we're all unbalanced and doing so much for everyone else all the time. What is the attitude we carry? The attitude we show outwardly every day. The attitude we walked in the door today with. The attitude we should have. The attitude of our life. John 8, verse 28. John 8, verse 28. Jesus said to the Jews that were listening to him there, "When you lift up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am He," meaning He is the God of the Old Testament, "and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father taught me, I speak these things, and he who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone." Why? This, in a nutshell, is His attitude. "For I always do those things that please Him." Notice how confident that statement is. I always do what pleases my Father. It's a childlike attitude. It's what kids do. I want to do what makes mom or dad happy. People sneer at that kind of attitude now. Why should I try to please anybody? I'm going to do what suits me. I'm going to live for me. I'm going to have and do what I want. I don't care what your desire is. I'm just going to go and live my life. And who are you to tell me different? That attitude is all over the world. We really have to be convicted about the impact of our attitude if we want to correct its course. Our attitude is sort of the forerunner of our life. It dictates to some degree what mood we find ourselves in, what mood we let in. I think that's important. What mood we let in. You ever meet that always annoyingly happy person? Almost seems fake. Some people just really carry that attitude. It's not that bad things aren't happening to these people. It's a choice to do something better than exhibit the current mood or feeling that's going on. Moods and feelings are powerful and can alter our attitude for sure. They can make us feel differently after a while if we let them fester. We have to make that choice to carry that feeling out that we want to manifest in our attitude. Attitude is not just a choice that works either way. It defines our value, and while we cannot change or control much of anything, we absolutely have the ability to carry an attitude that sets us apart, that glorifies God, that lives up to what we have been asked to do. Someone put this together, and I don't know who it was. I came across it in my little collection of stories and quotes. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was encouraging. For all the negative things we have to say to ourselves, God has a positive answer for it. You say, "It's impossible." God says, "All things are possible." Luke 18:27. You say, "I'm too tired." God says, "I will give you rest." Matthew 11:28. You say, "Nobody really loves me." God says, "I love you." John 3:16. You say, "I can't go on." God says, "My grace is sufficient." 2 Corinthians 12:9. You say, "I can't figure things out." God says, "I will direct your steps." Proverbs 3:5. You say, "I can't do it." God says, "You can do all things." Philippians 4:13. You say, "I'm not able." God says, "I am able." 2 Corinthians 9:8. You say, "It's not worth it." God says, "It will be worth it." Romans 8:28. You say, "I can't forgive myself." God says, "I forgive you." 1 John 1:9. You say, "I can't manage." God says, "I will supply all your needs." Philippians 4:19. You say, "I'm afraid." God says, "I have not given you the spirit of fear." 2 Timothy 1:7. You say, "I'm always worried and frustrated." God says, "Cast all your cares on me." 1 Peter 5:7. You say, "I don't have enough faith." God says, "I have given everyone a measure of faith." Romans 12:3. You say, I'm not smart enough. God says, I give you wisdom. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 30. You say, I feel all alone. God says, I will never leave you or forsake you. Hebrews 13, verse 5. Our experiences in life should change us. Job insecurity, loss of health, loss of loved ones. They help us recognize the smallness of life, the temporary existence we all lead, the emptiness of physical things, leading our minds to something more. This is finding joy in our trials, as it says in the book of James. It should lift our spirits in a deep, meaningful way as we pivot our focus from physical strength, physical power, physical understanding, to a more lasting, more meaningful, more peaceful time ahead. Is that the attitude you carry?